Sports Radio 1290. CFRW, Winnipeg. All sports.
I'm still shaking right now. I'm just so honored to be included in this draft class.
All the time. Sports Radio 1290 presents the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of in-depth analysis, insight, and opinion into Canada's game. Now, here's Drew, Richard, and Ezra.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at sportsradio1290.com, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm the host of this fine program, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg, Richard Pollock, Michael Remus is operating the R desk, and producer Tim gets us in and out of commercial like the expert that he is. Gentlemen, good morning and welcome to the program.
You know, Drew, I hope you're ready to go. We have four guests coming up today. We have lots to talk about. I really hope that you're ready to
I'm bringing my A game. Are you bringing your A game?
I'm bringing my A++ game.
Wow, A++ game. That's a big game. A++. Richie, how about you?
Have you heard your new commercial yet, Ezzy?
I haven't heard it. You were telling me about it, but
yeah, it just features Ezzy. I think that
You're in there too.
Very briefly, the only one who's not in there is you, Richard. So
I'm frozen.
I think it's pretty obvious that you're getting usurped,
which
I'm totally in favor of, for the record.
I would have no problem with just Richie.
Just Richie?
Yeah.
On a commercial, like in my own commercial.
As far as I'm concerned, you know, like commercials, we know who we are. I don't need to hear sound clips, for my own narcissism, but I appreciate that I was included because the first commercial we had
it's
when
funny
we got
that
on.
Did you say that? Considering you're carrying a mirror and you're looking at it yourself in a mirror as we speak.
Combing my hair.
That's all.
Checking my popped collar.
Yeah. Richie, I hear you had a bit of a saucy Thursday night.
Saucy.
Yeah.
You had some fun, Drew.
Yeah.
St. Patrick's Day.
St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah.
You get a little out of hand.
I left it all on the table.
You left it all on the table.
Literally.
Yeah.
Richie had a strong hand. He played it.
Yeah. Got a little out of control, but that's all good. Boys, why don't we run down what we have in store for you to our good listening.
We're going
audience.
Division by division, team by team.
We're actually not going division by division, team by team today, but we are joined by four fabulous guests. The first guest coming up at 10 o'clock this morning, Anthony Sanfilippo from the Delaware County Daily Times. Probably the guest who's been on the program the most.
Has he counted?
I actually checked on this because every week we update Twitter and Facebook. This is actually going to be his eighth appearance.
Really,
Is getting very close to double digits. So
yeah, wow. Yeah, baby. Yeah.
I think that was for his eighth appearance or for Ezzy's counting skills?
Yeah,
I'm not sure which.
Hey, wow,
yeah. Wow.
It's very
He's
hard.
Two away from ten.
You know, Saturday 9 o'clock in the morning. You know, it's harder than you think.
Yeah,
so
I imagine.
I had to think about that.
I'm not even touching that one by at all. Coming up at 10:30 this morning from the Winnipeg Free Press, Tim Campbell will join us. Tim was down in Boca Raton, Florida. He gets all the difficult assignments for the Free Press, obviously.
Yeah, Boca Vista, phase two.
Exactly. And he was there for the NHL General Manager's meeting, so he's going to join us to talk about those. And then coming up 11 o'clock from the Buffalo News, Mike Harrington is going to join us, talk some Sabres. Sabres are making a run to the playoffs, so we're going to talk to Mike about that. And then one of our favorite guests, not that Mike isn't, of course, also, and the rest of them are also aren't. At 11:15 this morning, Dan Wood from the Anaheim Ducks Radio Network is going to be joining us to talk about another team right on the cusp of a playoff spot right now.
Well, you know, the GM meetings are obviously topical, and obviously with the return of the NHL to Winnipeg, the possibility of that's topical. You toss in Anaheim in the Western Conference, Buffalo in the Eastern Conference, and we're trying to really, give you all sorts of perspectives in terms of the playoff chase, and then, of course, Sanfilippo talking about Philly, who is the Eastern Conference, arguably the Eastern Conference favorite right now, especially with Sidney Crosby being injured. But I think the road to the Stanley Cup in the East goes through Philly.
People are sort of forgetting about Washington. Washington is now mere percentage points behind Philadelphia.
Sure, and I realize that, Drew, but at the same time, this is a Philadelphia team that finished eighth last year.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, they were eighth.
Eighth or seventh. I thought they won, ended up being seventh.
By beating the Rangers on that last day?
Yeah,
well,
so.
Whatever it was.
Over, yeah.
But they underachieved last year, is what most people would tell you. And this year they're playing to where everybody thought they are.
But they
are who we thought they were.
But they are and they aren't, Drew. This is always a team that seems to bring a different level in the playoffs.
Well, so we'll see.
Canadian team.
In terms of
roster.
Roster, so, yeah. In terms of the players on their team. Did you see Mike Richards' tweet yesterday?
I didn't.
Mike Richards.
I don't follow him.
He just joined Twitter apparently recently, and he tweeted yesterday that they're playing. It's a tough game in Atlanta. No crowd, no atmosphere. They should move the team to Winnipeg.
Really?
Yeah. But coming from a good Kenora boy, you wouldn't expect.
That's right. Well, there was a funny tweet. Was it by Nick Kiprios when there was the first concussion? I think was it Boyce on Toronto?
Yeah.
And he said, you know, they need to take him to a quiet area for 15 minutes. He goes, no problem finding a quiet area at Florida.
In Florida, yeah, I saw that. If you want to get a hold of us here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, you can do so via Twitter. You can find us at Illegal Curve on Twitter. Send us your comments. If they're good enough, we'll maybe throw them on the air. We'll see.
You can also follow... You put...
What?
Putting pressure on the listeners.
Well, I'll tell you what. If we're going to bring our A game and Ezzy's bringing his A++ game, then I expect our listeners to also bring their A game.
Yeah, but we should say this to our listeners, though. We get a lot of questions via email, too. But, you know, we want to kind of get more questions via Twitter. I put this out on my own Twitter account, too.
What's that? If you should advertise it.
Oh, I'm Ezra Jug on Twitter, but mainly
just you can find us through
Illegal Curve account is where we want to get most of our questions.
Yeah.
But you know that's the quickest way to do it. Really.
That's right. So. You've got 160 characters. Shoot us a comment at Illegal Curve on Twitter. You can friend us on Facebook at illegalcurve.com on Facebook, and of course you can always email us on studio@illegalcurve.com, and we'll be taking your phone calls at 780-1290, area code 204-780. 1290.
You can do it!
There you go. Damn right you can do it. Let's get started with a recap of a quiet Friday night in the NHL. But I think what we can finally do once and for all is put a nail in the coffin of the New Jersey Devils season.
Yeah, you know, and it really, Richie, it does pain me to say this, but, you know, they lost. The Devils lost to Ottawa Thursday night.
It was twice to Ottawa in the past 2 weeks.
Yes, they
twice
have.
To Ottawa.
Those are the games that have actually been the ones that have definitely done it.
By the way, can I get in here for a second? Can we get rid? I don't know. Can we get rid of this Jock Lemaire for Coach of the Year talk?
I was the one that was talking about.
Everybody
that.
Has now. It was on TSN and Hassan and Waltz were talking about. It. I mean, I understand people are saying, you know, he's done
it's
a great job with this
Richie.
Team. First of all, this team was done when he started. Okay, I understand that he's turned them around, but I understand there's no Zach Parise. But remember this though, guys. This is a team talent wise that I mean, I pick for the division. Many people pick for the division. This is a talented team. They brought in Volchenkov. They brought in Talander. They have Marty Brodeur back there. They have very deep at forward, veteran team. He did a great job. But he hasn't coached a full season, and he did take over a team that's percentages were going to go in the upswing regardless of if he came to coach or not, and that had a lot of talent. He's done a great job, but there's other coaches who would deserve this award over him. He can be mentioned, but to me, he's not even a nominee.
Well, Richie, I think it like, obviously, the Lemaire for, you know, the Jack Adams Trophy makes for good conversation, but I don't even think it's an issue now because the Devils aren't going to make the playoffs, so I don't think...
Now it's not, but...
But I know what you're saying, though, even earlier this week, but... I mean, I just think the reason why I was, you know, champion it is just because of the crazy job that he's done. But, yeah, I mean...
You were champion everything for the Devils.
It was an incredible run. They made it interesting. They got up to back to respectability. But, you know, yesterday, that was a tough one. You know, getting beat by the Caps after getting beat by the Sens. So,
well,
it was a good run.
Washington beat New Jersey 3-0 in New Jersey last night, and that's what we're referring to.
Yep.
In New York last night, really just looked like a tired Montreal Canadiens team, I thought.
Yeah, watch that first period, Drew.
Outscored 5-1 in the first period, and at that point it was over.
The Habs played the night before. They traveled. They have a lot of injuries. Their defense is horrible right now, the Habs. I mean,
they're just so thin.
They have a lot of guys up there who they don't want to even be playing on. You know, they have a Roman Hamrlik who's as slow as can be. They have Yannick Weber back there who lacks certainly defensively. There's a lot of weakness back there. And with a traveled game, the truth is that they weren't as desperate at the Rangers as it was mentioned on the show.
That's right.
And for whatever reason, Carey Price started.
I don't understand.
God knows why.
Yeah, back to back after traveling, that should have been a game for Alex Alt.
Yeah, you're in the playoffs. I mean, based on the odds here, that the Habs are at.
Nobody's catching the
99.7%. I mean, they're in the playoffs, and
especially in the terrible Eastern.
And so you can't. I don't. You know, this isn't like Ron Wilson. You know, his Jagr decision, which we can discuss later if we want. But this was a game that Alex Ovechkin should have played.
Yeah,
because Carey Price is your key to winning any playoff series. I already said in the show 2 weeks ago that the Habs aren't making it out of the first round, and I still believe that.
Yep.
But Carey Price gives you your best chance, and if you get him tired, if you tire him out during the regular season, you're going to be in trouble when it comes to the playoffs.
Yeah. Playoffs?
The Rangers were up. Rangers were up 5-1 after one. They ended up winning 6-3 in Carolina last night. Carolina's just got a win. If they're going to have a chance to, they're battling neck and neck with Buffalo for that final playoff spot in the Eastern Conference.
According to Sports Club stats, their win increased their percentages of making the playoffs by 5.7%. Still putting them at a low 29.7, but.
They're tied with Buffalo for the final playoff spot. Buffalo has two games in hand, and Buffalo has the tiebreaker with more wins at the moment. Carolina beat the New York Islanders 3-2 in Carolina last night. Game they have to have, and they did have it. Took them till overtime, but they still have it.
Late comeback, Jeff Skinner scoring the second goal, sorry, scoring the tying goal, and then setting up the winner with Joni Pekkanen.
In Vancouver last night, the Canucks were the first team in the NHL to clinch a playoff spot. Maybe they took the night off. Phoenix 3, Vancouver 1.
The Canucks badly outplayed Phoenix in the first two periods and couldn't get anything. I mean, Richie was talking about the Habs starting Carey Price after going with Ald, but I was surprised that Phoenix went with LaBarbera, and LaBarbera ended up playing unbelievably. So, Phoenix, they played a really tight defensive game, and they were badly outshot, Richie. I think the shot, I don't have the shots off the top of my head. I think LaBarbera ended up with 38 saves or something. But that was a huge steal for them. Vancouver obviously was coming in seven wins in a row. But I think Phoenix stole that game.
That Manny Malhotra loss is huge.
Yeah, well, we'll talk about the Manny Malhotra injury. A career-threatening injury.
Well, I mean, again, you don't want to wear a visor.
I know you're going to get hit in the head with you're going to get hit in the eye.
I want to wear a visor.
I know.
It's happened so many times. Brian Berard, many players have lost the sight in their eye because of sticks and pucks and. For whatever reason, these guys continue to not want to wear visors.
It's beyond.
Player like Manny Malhotra. I mean, he's not the most physical player ever, but he certainly engages a fair amount. He's in face-off, sticks are waving around everywhere there.
When you're a team's top penalty killer,
that's right.
That's got to be a factor.
Shots.
I mean, it's tough because these guys just don't. They don't want to wear visors for comfort.
Well,
they don't like the look of it.
And
that's
then
why they don't do it.
And then he's not going to see for the rest of his life. So he knew the risk, and now it's come back. It's come back to bite him.
Richie mentioned Berard, Colin White. Iserman had an eye injury.
Yeah. Well,
there's a long list.
I'll tell you what. There's one thing I don't want to mess around with, and that's my eyes for the most part.
Yeah. No. You got to start thinking harder about it.
Yeah. Call me a wimp, but I like my eyes where they are. Another sort of quiet Saturday night in the NHL, though. It was a quiet Friday night. Only 10 games tonight in the NHL, or today in the NHL. Marquee game, really, maybe Anaheim-Los Angeles, I would think.
Anaheim-Los Angeles, Drew, and then you've got Buffalo playing in Atlanta for that last playoff spot.
No, so Atlanta's in Buffalo.
Atlanta and Buffalo. Atlanta doesn't win that game. They're joining
they're
New Jersey,
done.
So
yeah. They're done. I think they are done. Anyways.
Huge game there. Those are my two games.
But it's sort of
Anaheim,
a drab,
LA.
Yeah, sort of a drab Saturday night.
What's
though.
The doubleheader tonight?
Doubleheader tonight is either Boston at Toronto or Tampa Bay at Ottawa. I imagine we'll get Boston at Toronto.
I hope so.
And then the late game is Colorado at Edmonton. And do anything other than watch that game.
And both of those games. All those games are terrible.
Do anything else. Go out. Right. Spend time with your loved one. Whatever it may be. Do something other than that. Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to go through the week in on-ice NHL discipline. What's a week in the NHL without numerous headshots?
Are you going to discipline Richie here?
Always. Off-air and on-air. Yeah, exactly. The first saucy
nice.
Thursday night. Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This morning, we'll continue on. We're going to start off with our conversation about the week that was in on-ice NHL discipline. Let's start in Montreal, where Vincent Lecavalier received a 5-minute major and a game misconduct for his slash on PK Subban
Thursday night, yeah.
Yeah, because they played back-to-back Thursday, Friday. They were jousting behind the net, a little back and forth each way. Subban was definitely giving Lecavalier a bit of the gears as well. And they came back in front of the net, and Lecavalier pretty much just, took a two-hander right at Subban. Sort of two parts to the question. Do you think that the slash was as bad as it looked?
Yeah.
And is this just indicative of how much Subban is getting under the skin of opposing players?
Okay, Richie, I'll take the first part. The second part, I think he is getting under the skin of players, and I like it. I like PK Subban's game. I don't think he's getting under. Let me answer the first part. I think if Subban gets injured, then we're maybe talking about discipline. But I think it looked maybe worse than it really was. But it was pretty bad. In that situation, though, isn't that a situation where if he gets injured, we're talking about maybe a couple of games, but because he wasn't
there.
It's a slash. That's hockey. I mean, back in the, you know, the late 90s, guys were hacking each other like that all the time. So, but I think Subban's just doing, like, that's his job. I mean, if he get, Montreal could very well play Tampa. Maybe not in the first round. Could play in the first round, but he's getting out of, he's doing his job.
I think he's doing his job. I didn't, you know what? When comparing this to the other hits this week, and we'll talk about the Heatley hit and the Brad Marchand hit, I didn't mind this hit so much. It was a definitely a hard two-hand, but it was a two-hand to the guy's leg where it's padded. You know, where, you know, yeah, he probably deserved a five in a game, but I was okay with that being it.
I think...
because there was not a real attempt to injure. Well, I mean, you know, you're not going to injure a guy that severely by slashing him in the leg.
But the thing is, if you slash a guy in the wrist and then he gets, you know, breaks his wrist, then we're, you know, that's two, 5 games or something like that.
I do agree with your assessment, though, that if he'd been injured, you know, if it had been to an unpadded area, then I think there's a suspension involved.
Well, that's just it. And the question is, did he intend to hit him there where it wasn't really, you know, where you couldn't really get injured, or was it just happened to be? I was like, I thought it was a suspendable offense, Drew. I thought one game probably would have, you know, he got kicked out of one game, so that's kind of one, you know, a game or a game and a half, you know.
Yeah.
One more game wouldn't have hurt. It still is a weapon. I mean, it sticks a weapon just as much as an elbow is.
Yeah.
And so I think that is a suspendable offense. Obviously, Subban's getting under the skin of these players. But I think regardless of that fact, I thought that it was a two-hand with the intent, you know, the intent to really come down hard on him. And I personally think that that was a suspendable offense, one game. And then, you know, he's aware of it, he loses a little bit of money. Because he gets kicked out of that game, doesn't lose any money.
Right.
Give him that little monetary slap.
Do you think that the fact that they were sort of going back and forth before the two-hand, because Subban did definitely slash Le Cavalier also.
I know, he did.
Do you think the fact that Subban was good, that they were going at each other, factored into the fact that Le Cavalier didn't get suspended?
It's a good point. I think that's very possible. I think, you know, as an aside here, I think Subban, we're going to look back at Subban in a couple of years, and he's going to be similar to the Kessler and Burrows, wondering why he has so much of this, you know, extracurricular stuff. He's going to realize that eventually that is hurting his game.
Yeah.
Well, that's
fine. He's consumed with it, and I think that, you know, he needs to develop into a better decision maker, a steadier defenseman. But the physical tool is there, the skill is certainly there, and he just needs to be a little bit more disciplined. I think Jacques Martin is the right coach for him too. I mean, Jacques Martin, spoken about on this show before, did a really good job developing, you know, Wade Redden and those kind of guys in Ottawa. And I think he's the right guy for Subban. He won't let him get too out of hand.
Okay.
And I think I really think I agree with you 100%. He's got so many good tools there, and I think Subban legitimately doesn't want to be involved in incidents like this. By the way,
I'm not so sure about
this
that.
This is another Hab. This is another incident involving Montreal Canadiens. But the way I look at this too,
this is a hockey play to me.
Can I jump in? Can we talk about quickly about the Patrick Reddy?
Yeah.
About they expect him to be back for the playoffs as possible.
Yeah.
It's a concussion. Who knows?
Saying that he might be back doesn't mean anything.
Why would Jacques Martin say that?
Well, I didn't understand why. First of all, that doesn't lessen what Chara did to him.
No, I mean, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the expectation,
you know,
of concussion,
the possibility that he'll come back, and, you know.
A concussion player should be...
He won't skate for another month, Drew, so...
Yeah, exactly. A concussion player should be out indefinitely, and you know, when he's healthy, and that's when people should find out.
I think one thing
you can't put a timeline on a concussion.
And back to Subban quickly. I think Subban's taken on more responsibility than the Habs envisioned for him because of so many injuries in the back end.
Well, that,
I mean, Markov and Georges and all those guys, I mean, they would be playing significant minutes. They would allow him to be play a little bit more what people call sheltered minutes against maybe lesser competition. And right now, he's been thrown to the wolves. You look at the defense they had on the ice last night, you realize why he's been thrown to the wolves. Drew, that defense can't do anything.
No.
I mean, it's amazing what their record is. It really is. I look at that team is greater than the sum of its parts. Because you look at that team, and the talent level just isn't there.
And Richie, you were talking about Hamrick. He's playing too much. Hamrick is playing too much.
He's so slow, Ezra.
He's playing way too much, and Subban is playing too much, and that maybe speaks to, you know, another reason why Carey Price should be considered a Vezina or even Hart Trophy candidate.
I agree.
Because you look at it, and you're like... And not only that, Richie, you mentioned, you know, how are they doing this well without Andre Markov, without Josh Georges, without Spacek, who they're expecting to come back in three weeks, I believe. And that's because Carey Price has been very good. But also, they haven't been scoring as much as last year. There's a lot of guys that you know, are struggling this year. You look at Gomez, Gionta. Those guys aren't putting up huge numbers. So you have to look at the goaltending and you know, say, okay, Price is just doing his job every night. He's giving them, he's not letting in weak goals like he was in his second year when he was struggling. So that's going to be a huge problem when you play a team like Boston, who's got, you know, tons of offensive firepower, right?
Let's move to the Danny Heatley hit on Steve Ott. Sort of the type of hit we've seen a lot this year, where Ott is reaching for to poke the puck out of the defensive zone, and Heatley's looking to keep it in, and Heatley got him with a hit to the head. Heatley got two games. You know, you look at this. We were playing hockey.
It was from behind, though.
No, it wasn't from behind.
You're talking about Doug Murray on Erickson right now?
Oh, you're right. I'm confusing the hits. Sorry, that's my fault. Okay. You're right. I'm confusing.
So which one do you want to talk about first?
Let's talk about the Heatley hit. Heatley got suspended for two games. It was from behind. That's right.
It was pretty blatant.
Yeah. I got my hits confused there.
That's right. With the huge elbow pads that these guys have, that was a certainly suspendable offense. I mean, Steve Ott is, I think, the second most penalized guy in the league. He was calling for some action. And you know what? You can still be the second most penalized guy in the league and call for action, because penalties doesn't necessarily equate you with being dirty.
Mm-hmm.
Now, don't get me wrong, Steve Ott is on the edge, if not dirty.
Yep.
But regardless of who is on the receiving end of a hit like that, it should be dealt with accordingly.
I think it's funny that...
Is two games dealing with it accordingly?
No.
That's a fair question. I would say you might be right about that.
In that it's not?
Right.
The general managers are meeting, you know, they're talking about, you know, should we institute a blanket headshot rule? As that's happening, Danny Heatley is skating behind someone and blatantly elbowing the guy in the head. It's pretty simple what they should have done. I mean, and people might disagree and say, oh, you know, it wasn't that bad. It was clearly retaliatory, and he clearly elbowed another player in the head maliciously. Give him 10 games minimum. You give a guy like Heatley 10 games, one of the top paid guys in the league, that sends a message. What's two games? Heatley's going to be back, and you know he gets suspended Thursday. He'll be back Monday. I mean, what
ridiculous.
Is that?
Ridiculous.
What does that actually accomplish?
Well, you're right, Ezzy, but we've had this conversation on air so many times that the NHL, you know, disciplinary committee is not disciplining anybody.
I was fine with that suspension.
You're fine with two games only because you expect.
So Richie, what
that
you're saying
you
is a guy.
I can skate
behind a guy and elbow him in the face and he gets two games. That's what you're saying. You're fine with that. A guy can.
I generally skate
behind another guy, elbow the guy in the face, in the head, possibly giving him a concussion, and that's worth two games. That's what you're saying. And that's what, I'm not saying just you. That's what the NHL is saying.
No, I mean, maybe just watching it live, I didn't think it was as bad as everybody else did. I was fine with the suspension.
I mean, if you look at it, Heatley almost seems like he, you know, the play's gone.
Yeah, he goes retaliatory.
The play's gone, and he just sort of sticks out his elbow or his shoulder to hit the guy in the head for no reason.
At some point, Drew, you talk about the hockey plays. I'm not saying that's part of hockey, but guys go at each other. Guys do some stuff out there. You know, you suspend them, okay, fine, but you don't need to hand out a 10-game suspension every single time.
I'm not saying it has to be a 10-game suspension, but, I mean, I don't know if this is the... I mean, there was no reason for Heatley to have done this. Like, it's not. It wasn't even in the course of the action.
Also, I mean, these guys talk trash. These guys are at each other. It's the Chara thing, and him saying he didn't know what he was doing. He knew what he was doing, but when you get into the emotion of the game,
it's hard.
And you're competitive. You can't. Your discretion, you know, falls by the wayside sometimes. And I'm not saying you're not accountable for your actions, but it has to be taken into account.
I just thought that there was no reason for it. The play had gone. The puck was up the ice.
There's no reason for any of these dirty plays.
Heatley just skated past him and gave him a forearm shiver to the head.
If I'm San Jose, I'm happy that Healy's showing enough passion to actually do something like that.
That's a separate issue altogether. The final suspension from the NHL this week, Brad Marchand got two games for an elbow to the head of RJ Umberger. I thought this one deserved more than two games. This one, I thought, was pretty blatant.
It's the exact same thing.
I thought this was worse than the Heatley one.
I did, too, when I watched it the first time.
I thought this was worse than the Heatley one. I thought this was just exactly what they're trying to allegedly get out of the game. And he just comes past them. With the blindside hit to the head. It was exactly what... the definition of a blindside hit to the head.
Richie, this is my point, okay? And we've all watched hockey growing up. We've seen year after year after year.
So this
there's
one...
there's suspend... I just want to say just one thing really quickly. Year after year after year, we look everything at a case-by-case, you know, case-by-case thing. And, you know, this guy should have got 10 games. This guy should have got two games. I'm pretty sure that if you're not going to, you know, take a hard-line stand, then... You're never going to solve the problem of injuries in the NHL if you allow little things like this. Basically, I'm sorry, two games, that's nothing. Two games, you might as well just not suspend the guy.
Come down,
you
give a guy two-game suspension.
Exactly. You're trying to...
It's nothing. It's useless.
I agree with you, Ezzy. And we're going to talk about it. And we're going to talk about how the public... I mean, that poll came out this week. We'll talk about it in the next segment about how the public is getting fed up with it. And when the public gets fed up with it, when your paying customer gets fed up with it, like it or not, the NHL has to start. That's their bread and butter. It's a gate-driven league. And when people won't pay the tickets, that's when they got a serious problem. So, I mean, they're getting close there. Before we go to break, though, I just want to touch briefly on the MJHL suspensions.
Well, but, you know, Drew, quickly, though.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess the issue really is, our argument is, you know, the Healy play was dirty, but it seemed like the worst injury is because, you know, Amberger has hit some guys, and, you know, he hit Brian Campbell years ago. Is whether the guy sees it coming or sees it as a possibility. In the Healy case, it was dirty, and I'm not saying he expected an elbow, but he was looking at him.
Yeah.
He's looking right at him, and Steve Ott's is a pretty dirty player, so he knows that people do that. You know, and Healy stuck out his elbow. It was dirty, but, I mean, he stuck out his elbow and hit him, but he didn't. I mean, he didn't take a huge run at him. He wasn't skating hard. He was gliding when he hit him.
Yeah, I know.
Okay? Now, Marshawn, Umberger didn't even see him.
No, came blindside.
See, that to me is, and you mentioned it before, that's something, a distinguishing point.
Yeah. Like, Ott saw it coming, and it shouldn't have happened, but they were facing each other. Umberger had his back turned to
it.
Equating those two hits, then right. You got something wrong.
I think they're different.
MJHL, very quickly. Kudos to the NHL, MJHL. They handed out some severe suspensions for that ridiculous game-ending brawl.
I don't even really know what happened there.
It was a hit from behind with 3 seconds to go. I think the Portage Terriers...
As an aside...
...were winning the series, and Swan River went ballistic.
As an aside, for
Swan Valley,
all the suspensions that are going out now and all the big talk, you know, at the higher levels and NHL levels about suspensions,
yeah.
The biggest problem at the minor league level, from my experience coaching, is hits from behind.
Well, and this was a hit from behind. So the MJHL came down hard on the Swan Valley player who perpetrated the act, a 40-game suspension, which is coming down hard. But I got to say, for the two assistant coaches that fought each other behind the benches to only get 22 games each, that's too low.
Well, see, this is the thing. Yeah, I mean, me and Richie are having a healthy debate, and that's fine. We always do. That's, you know, not, we don't all, you know, there's three of us, so we don't all have the same opinion. But the way I look at it, I truly don't believe, and I'll say this time and time again, I'm supportive of physicality in hockey. I like fighting in hockey. But I think if they actually want to take this out of the game, they're not going to accomplish it by little slaps on the wrist. This is what I think. I think they're expecting this as part of the game. And what I'm talking about is little shots to the head and this and that. But you're right. In the MJHL, you suspend the guy for half of a season. He's not going to be able to play till next season. Jesse Enns was the name of the player.
Yeah, that's right. 40
on Swan Valley.
Yeah.
But you're right. What you want to do is, if you're the MJHL and you're saying, we don't ever want anything like this to happen, well, I would suspend the guy for 2 years.
No, you can't suspend him for 2 years. That's ridiculous. You're ending his 40 games is a good suspension.
No. I'm talking about the coaches, Drew.
Oh, if you're the
20
coaches?
Games, what do you... I mean, no. 20 games, 40 games, apples and oranges.
Should we go to break here?
Yeah, we should go to break. We're right up against it.
You know, at the end of the day, Drew, the ends justify the means.
Oh, that's a very good pun, Richard.
Elaborate, please.
It doesn't matter. His name's Jesse Enns, so that's a good pun. There you go. Ron McLean's in studio with us today, apparently. Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the new headshot protocol in the NHL. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. .9:35. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. What is this little... Who is that?
Stevie Wonder.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, Richie. I forgot that you were...
Come on.
Drew, I don't really like this musical chairs that we're playing in the studio right now.
You're
right?
In my way.
Pick your spot. Let's go.
You're in my way. Get out of my way so I can get back on the air. That's all I ask of you.
Hearing us.
That's all I ask.
Quick break.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. To reach us here in studio, you can do it on Twitter, @IllegalCurve. You can do it on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve.
By the way, I came across your LinkedIn account.
Yeah?
Drew.
I was Googling you.
That's not creepy.
And, for our big article... I was looking for pictures of you.
Ezzy, you've known me for 20-something years. You have to Google me find out information?
No, hold on. I was trying to find a...
Drew likes long walks on the beach.
I was trying to find a professional picture of you for our big article.
You would have asked
you
me for
email
a
him.
Picture.
Talk to him 10 times a day.
Well, I don't know. You're a busy guy. I just thought I would Google images, and the first image that came up was your LinkedIn account.
You email us 30 times a day, and you couldn't have just said, hey, Drew, send me a picture?
There's a full-length article on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, I believe, in this week's edition of the Jewish Post
News. That's right.
We're going to be big.
So look out, City of Winnipeg. We are hitting the big time.
Picture taking credit to Carly Sullivan.
That's right. We took a fabulous picture, a group photo of this past week.
We actually have a Groupon.
Our picture is a Groupon. Yeah. Actually, we were joking about that. We should sell our toques on Groupon.
That's not a bad idea. I never heard about this.
I said it 5 minutes ago.
We had a marketing meeting, Richie, without you.
I see.
Yeah. We're actually trying to cut Richard out. First you're getting cut out of the commercials, then you're getting cut out of the show.
He drew in the creator of Groupon.
Is that the five-step process?
Can we discuss the scarf you're wearing?
You don't like it?
I'm not sure why you're wearing a scarf. You're not doing the show outside.
You're wearing two layers. So is Ezzy. I'm wearing one layer. Can I wear a scarf?
One layer. It's a fake T-shirt underneath.
This looks like a cheap piece of material, if you ask me.
Well, so I wouldn't expect anything different.
40% polyester.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. That little interlude was brought to you by our insanity. Our insanity is available 9 to 12 every Saturday morning here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Let's continue on with the... let's start with the general manager's meetings that took place this week in Boca Raton, Florida.
I'm pretty sure they didn't actually do anything. They just golfed. All those interviews in the background with the ocean?
Yeah.
Like, what were they doing over there?
Well, we'll ask Tim Campbell about that. He was there in Florida, and he's going to join us at 10:45 this morning to talk about the meetings. The big news coming out of it was the NHL's new efforts to curb concussions. They have a five-step plan, which is... pretty much the equivalent of the Simpsons giving up sort of like a blue ribbon panel. I love the NHL. I'll tell you what, there's no organization that moves slower than the NHL.
Yet, at the same time, Drew, they change their rules every 5 minutes. So
nobody knows what the rules are, anything else like that?
Somebody had a tweet this week, I forget who it was, at some point is the NHL going to stop always changing? I mean, I understand being on the edge and always wanting to improve your game.
Yeah.
But at some point, I mean, baseball and NBA, I mean, NBA does it changes the rules a fair amount, and NFL somewhat, but... The rules, it seems like, in baseball and in football and in the NBA, they don't change as significantly as NHL rules.
Probably because they're not as good. The NHL is always tweaking to try and gather fan interest.
Like, the shootout was the dumbest idea ever. Yeah. Nobody cares about the shootouts anymore. Now they decide playoff spots. I realize a tiebreaker doesn't, but, I mean, one point. That's
absolutely.
And they do these gimmicky things to try and appeal to... The NHL is like the boyfriend trying for the girl back who's not interested in him anymore. And they keep trying for the girl instead of moving to the people who actually care about them.
Are you speaking from personal experience in this case?
No, Drew. Well, maybe. I don't know. So you should read into that as you will.
Well, if I could chime in here with someone with that type of experience.
You're trying to appeal. Again, you're trying to appeal to a market who doesn't care.
That's right.
Yep. Florida has more people watching infomercials than NHL hockey. Let's try and appeal to Florida. Nobody actually cares. You know, in the big cities, in the big hockey cities, I think the shootout is probably not very well liked. And I know one thing.
You mean in traditional hockey
in town. The NHL circles, in terms of actual... I mean, if you want talent to decide who's best teams to decide who's making the playoffs, let the best teams play. And that's just maybe a little bit of a tangent that I'm going on. But the point is that you're always trying to appeal. You're trying to create offense. Let's create offense. Let's put a penalty for shooting the puck over the glass. How many players who shoot the puck over the glass now? How many players did it before intentionally?
Almost none.
What about the goalie rule? Why can't a goalie who's got good stick talent play the puck?
And goalie with
good stick talent, Ezzy, would limit the defensive injuries because the forechecking wouldn't be...
I was just going to say that was brought up at these meetings that they're thinking about changing the trapezoid rule, but really, they should be thinking about... they should think about getting rid of the shootout. They should be thinking about getting rid of that delay of game penalty for a player shooting the puck out of the net.
It's the dumbest rule ever.
Over the glass.
You were talking...
Get rid of all of them.
You picked me up last week and you were saying about...
At the bar?
About an incident, might have been.
We went to the PAL. 4 o'clock on a Tuesday.
When the puck was in the defensive zone and the guy shot the puck all the way down the ice over the other side's glass, and it was a penalty. How dumb is that?
It's a dumb rule.
This is a joke.
It was Ovechkin. It was Ovechkin that got that penalty.
It's a dumb rule. I mean, the guy's obviously trying to clear it out. He successfully clears it out, and just because it happens to go over a shorter part of the glass or whatever, he gets penalized for it.
You know why they do it, though?
To create offense.
That creates power plays. Exactly.
Power plays create offense.
Five penalties is you equate 20%, for example. So that's five penalties is a goal.
That's right. Every fifth penalty is going to be a goal. So if you call more penalties, there's going to be more goals logically. Let's go to the five steps or the new five-step plan implemented by the NHL. God bless them. They might be the slowest. My grandparents move slower than they do. Step one.
Faster than they do.
Pardon me, faster than they do. Step one.
I've seen my grandfather walk.
Work with the NHL Players Association on equipment reforms.
Wow.
How many years have we been... I mean, I was going to bring in my elbow pad today.
Don Cherry's been doing that for 10 years, knocking the elbow pad against his studio.
I was going to bring my elbow pad. It's actually in the car. I was going to bring my elbow pad in to hit Ezzy in the head with it to see how many times it takes to concuss him, because it won't be that many.
Concuss? Is that a word?
Yeah, concuss.
You can concuss somebody?
When you give somebody a concussion, you concuss them.
Really?
normally you're just used to being cussed, Richard.
So in
this case, I'm going to concuss Ezzy.
Keep going.
So, I mean, it's been... how slow could they possibly move on these equipment reforms? It's unbelievable. Second step would be to revise the current concussion protocol. If a player is suspected of being concussed during a game, the player must then be removed from the bench and taken to a quiet area where the player can be assessed by a medical doctor.
Wow.
Whoa, isn't that nice with butterflies and rainbows and everything else? Like, what were they doing before? Giving the guy smelling salts and throwing him back out there?
Well, the trainer was dealing with him, not a doctor, and they weren't leaving the bench. Now, in some NHL arenas, as Kiprios said, I mean, that doesn't matter because nobody's
The way you said
there.
That, it makes it seem like Dr. Nick Rivera is like, like the guy that's...
Dr. Phil is sitting there, he's like,
I was
you okay?
trying to be a little bit, I was trying to be a little bit mocking there. I mean, these are people's heads we're talking about, their brains. Yeah. You know, their brains should be given a little bit more respect than that, is what I'm saying.
Throw me a freaking bone here!
Just a little bit more respect, that's all we're asking. I mean, they're treating them like, I don't know, cattle or something. I think, actually, they treat cattle better. Third, in dealing with players who are deemed repeat offenders on illegal hits to the head, penalties will be assessed to not only the player, but also to the team and or head coach.
That's just stupid.
I don't get it. Suspend the player for longer.
I mean, if these are kids, 14 or 15 or 16 or 17-year-old kids, okay, I understand holding the coach responsible. These are 30-year-old adults, guys. I mean, they make their own decisions. A player's dirty, you know, a coach, for example... Dan Bylsma doesn't really have an option to play Matt Cook or not. Matt Cook's under contract.
Yep. Yeah.
He's a dirty player. Ray Shiro signed him.
How is that his fault if Matt Cook does something stupid?
So, yeah, exactly. Bylsma's going to get suspended because he can't get through to Cook to change the way he plays the game? You want to change a guy who plays the game on edge or dirty, suspend him for longer.
Exactly.
That's a... Wow. Oh, it's amazing. Fourth thing, safety engineers will do a full evaluation of the playing area in each of the league's 30 rinks.
Thanks. That should be done every year.
Isn't that logical?
Yeah.
Shouldn't this have been instituted many years ago?
The sky is blue.
I'm pretty sure someone wrote this down on a napkin and just was like, okay, let's get something out there so we can go golf.
Yeah. And then the fifth and final step is my favorite one. They will be assembling a blue ribbon panel to continue to look at the issue of concussions going forward.
Like a Pabst blue ribbon panel?
It's a blue ribbon panel. I'm impressed. They got blue ribbons. They've done everything they can do.
Call it off.
Blue ribbons. We're done. Let's get out of here. What happens if they run out of blue ribbons? Does the panel fall apart?
Guys, it's very disappointing. You know, Sidney Crosby, I'm going to say this again. Best player in the world. Since Gretzky, because he's out, I think
Lemieux
this,
would probably.
This was. I'm just saying, one of the best players since Gretzky Lemieux. He has a concussion. These general manager meetings, I think, were a good opportunity to do something, and I really don't think they used this time.
Ezzy, they have a blue ribbon panel. Come on, how much more do you want them to do?
I want Sidney Crosby back for the playoffs. That's what I want. I don't want a blue ribbon panel. I want Crosby back for the playoffs.
What happens if Sidney Crosby's off the ice wearing a blue ribbon? Will that be okay for you?
Enough about the blue ribbon.
This is the point, guys. The point is that this should have been dealt with before the meeting. Other issues should have been addressed in the meeting because, as you mentioned, these issues are just so obvious and the solutions are just so obvious that this shouldn't have been what the discussion was for a significant portion of this weekend. And you wonder, with this many people, this many millionaires sitting together, and this much money and this many assets, why on earth they're not more efficiency in this process?
Yeah.
Because they're the slowest moving organization in the history of the world. Bureaucracy moves quicker than these guys do. It's unbelievable. Let's go to break. When we come back, what do we have? I think we have news and notes when we come back. So we'll talk about some of the other issues going on in the NHL, including Sidney Crosby, like you just mentioned. He's back on skates. Good sign. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, 9:45 this morning. Still to come on an action-packed edition of this show. Anthony Sanfilippo of the Delaware County Daily Times talking to Philadelphia Flyers. Next segment coming up at 10:45 this morning. Tim Campbell of the Winnipeg Free Press. 11 a.m. Mike Harrington of the Buffalo News. And 11:15 a.m. Dan Wood of the Anaheim Ducks Radio Network. Like I said, an action-packed time. And right now, though, it's time for NHL News and Notes.
NHL News and Notes.
Let's start in Vancouver this week with NHL News and Notes. We mentioned it earlier in the show. Manny Malhotra has undergone eye surgery to try and repair the damage that was caused when he was hit in the face with a slap shot, or when he was hit in the face with a puck during Vancouver's 4-2 win over Colorado on Wednesday. it sounds like it's a very scary situation. It sounds like it's a potentially career-threatening issue here. We know, I mean, we've spoken about the, I'm going to say, stupidity or for not wearing a visor. Let's talk about the loss of Malhotra, how it impacts the Canucks on the ice going forward into this playoff stretch run.
Significant. Very significant. You're talking about the guy who is as proficient as you're going to get in the faceoff circle. He plays tough minutes. He's their third-line center. They rely on him heavily. He plays 16 minutes a game, 61.7% faceoff percentage. That's terrific. I mean, his points, his points is incidental to really what he brings to the table, 30 points in 72 games. It's his ability to play against, you know, play in tough situations, play dirty minutes. And Kessler and Sedin ahead of him, obviously, are capable of doing that as well. But putting him out there for defensive zone faceoffs, putting him out there if you need an offensive zone faceoff, and whenever it may be, I mean, he's just he adds so much to the table. And losing a guy like that, when you're playing against, you know, teams like Detroit, I mean, guys like him are just so important. And you wonder how it's going to affect him. He plays significant shorthanded minutes. He plays, I mean, this is just a big loss, guys. I can't understate it, to be honest.
Do we know if Malhotra is out for the season? They haven't announced that.
Overstated what?
They haven't announced that yet.
They haven't said anything officially. Really, it depends. Really, they don't know what the damage to the eye is.
Right, he plays the most.
Right now he's out. He's listed as indefinite. That's why I was asking if we know if they've said anything.
It depends on how the eye handles the how it recovers from the trauma and everything else.
The most shorthanded minutes on the team for a forward.
Look, you get hit in the eye or in the eye region with a puck. Look at Luis Salazar, the coach of the Atlanta Braves.
That's terrible, yeah.
What a terrible tragedy that was. He got hit in the eye with a foul ball. They had to remove the eye.
I think this is
he lost his eye. I mean, you can't be a hockey player with one eye.
You know, elaborating on what Richie said, you know, the Canucks, they've pretty much got the President's Trophy. You know, they've got they're good for the regular season. They've got their playoff spot. They've got their home ice advantage. Richie, you nailed it there. But you know, this is a team that they're going for the Cup this year, and Malhotra is one of those players that he was brought in to put them over the top. I mean, I know Ballard and Hamhuis are our defensemen.
He's one of the depth guys that a team
forward
needs to do all the dirty work that you can, yep, so that you can win four rounds in April, May, and June.
And if he's out for the playoffs, then that's when Maxime Lapierre is not going to fill that role.
I suspect he is going to be out for the playoffs. I would be shocked if he comes back this year.
He plays against the toughest competition on the team as well. You know, Gabe Dijeron's metrics, who's on our show once a month. I mean, for forward, he plays against the toughest competition. He's putting in tough situations. He takes basically all, you know, he takes a majority of his faceoffs are in the defensive zone compared to offensive zone, which puts him in vulnerable positions in terms of plus minus and in terms of other situations like that. His importance to this team, again, cannot be overstated. And without him, if he doesn't come back, who knows? We don't know. I mean, we're speculating there.
You're right. We're speculating, right, but I'd be surprised. But go on.
You put him, you know, their edge as terms of the third line edge that they have.
Yeah.
Still have depth, of course. But it's that center hole that they have. Really, Lapierre to me is overrated. So, and I don't mind Lapierre's game, but he's overrated. Really,
but you like him better on a fourth line than you do on a
third
line.
Yeah, he's fine. I don't have a problem with the move. I don't think it's that, you know, that beneficial. Malhotra opens up a gaping hole there, and then you're matching up against other teams' third lines and teams like Detroit guys who have depth throughout the roster. What do you do? Even LA.
Yeah.
What do you do?
Well, you're in trouble now. Your matchup, a big advantage for you is now quite probably a weakness.
Yeah, this changes things for me. I mean, you lose him.
Yeah.
Your defensive question still, I mean, is Edler coming back? Who knows with back injuries?
Right.
And this is more significant too, Richie, than those injuries on defense because, you know, a guy...
Because they're all expected back.
A guy like Chris Tanev... He comes in on a good team. He's been, you know, groomed a little bit in the AHL. Vancouver didn't miss a beat. When they had all of those injuries to Hamhuis and Ballard on the back end, they survived that. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying they're going to go into a big late season slump. I'm just saying I think they're a little bit more deep on defense, and they're, you know, they've got the good goaltending. On forward, you're right. That's what it comes down to in the playoffs. In the playoffs, those things are exposed. Face-offs are huge. They've been talking
huge
about that for years.
Penalty killing.
Depth is huge. Versatility on forward is huge. And
Edler skated on Wednesday, by the way, so that's an encouraging sign. But, you know, they say 30 seconds for a face-off. When if you win the puck on the penalty kill and get out of the zone, 30 seconds. How many of those? I mean, Kessler's a good face-off guy. Don't get me wrong. still have good face-off guys, but Malhotra's terrific in the face-off circle, and he provides a left-handed option as opposed to, you know, Kessler's right-handed option. Many things go into this. This is going to be a, you know, you might not think, you probably won't notice in the first round,
but you'll notice it later on when you have to match up against those teams that have a huge amount of depth also.
Right.
That's where it's going to affect you. Moving on, Sidney Crosby was skated for the first time since his concussion in January earlier this week. Took about 15 minutes worth of full gear, 15 minutes on Monday. You know, it's certainly a good sign, but he doesn't seem that he's that much closer to returning to game action.
We talked about this 2 weeks ago. They don't know. And if you watched him skate, he looked a little awkward. He didn't look very comfortable.
Well, do you think it's a coincidence that after last week where we talked about, you know, potentially his family trying to convince him to retire, you know, and who knows how much truth there was to that, but, you know, it was obviously a topic of conversation. Do you think it's a coincidence that he skated on Monday and he was sort of back in Pittsburgh and front and center and everything else for the last weekend's games?
I don't understand why it would be so public, so I'm with you on that one, Drew. I think there's a little bit of
chicanery.
Yeah, a little PR here.
Yeah, saying, look, no, he's still a member of this team. He's not going anywhere.
Yeah, that's fair.
I thought it was a little bit, the timing was a little suspect and everything else. Moving on to Calgary, where they also suffered an injury. David Moss, you know, a centerman for the, who was playing on the top line with Tangi and Iginla.
When Morrison went out.
When Morrison went out and so they've lost Morrison, they've lost Moss now. What does that loss do for Calgary?
I mean, it's huge.
Very huge.
Huge. We're going to talk to Dan Wynn about it, but Calgary's season may very well come down to those two games against Anaheim.
Yeah.
Calgary right now is hanging on to the eighth playoff spot in the West.
All teams have a game in hand on them.
They're a point in front of Nashville, 2 points in front of Anaheim. The problem that Calgary is facing is that they've played three more games than Anaheim has.
Their odds are below 50% as opposed to last week when they were above 50%.
Well, it really comes down to the games in hand. It's what Anaheim does with those games in hand and what Nashville does with those games in hand.
You're right. I wanted to quickly say, Calgary looked really bad against Phoenix. They got the win against Colorado, who's just horrible. But that depth was exposed, I think, a lot against Phoenix because, you know, you've got Stajan and Backlund as your one and two centers. Matt Stajan and Backlund.
Well, they're only their number one and two centers because they're injured.
Yep. I think the MVP talk's quite interesting this year.
Go on.
It's a free-for-all.
There's nobody running away with it.
Toss anybody in there right now.
Yeah, you really are. You could. There's certainly no one running away with it. There's the argument can be made for a lot of different people.
That's what I'm saying.
Let's go to the, Colby Armstrong broke his foot, but when you're on the Toronto Maple Leafs, I'm not talking about you anymore because you're out of the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
Dave Nonis is going to head Team Canada at the World Hockey Championships. To me, isn't Nonis better suited as scouting or doing things that would improve the Leafs, potentially? I know it's playoff time, but shouldn't he be doing something to make the Leafs better as opposed to heading Team Canada? Is that a job for a guy who's not in the NHL at the moment?
Didn't really think about that. Interesting point. But, you know, Yzerman did it 2 years ago when he was working within the Wings front office. But
he wasn't the assistant general manager.
Yeah, that's fair.
I mean,
last year was Messier.
Yeah.
Hey, guys, I was just going to say, we all like we're fans of Mark Messier, but I don't think he can do any worse than Messier. Canada bombed last year. They finished sixth or seventh last year in the World Championship.
I don't remember. It's the World Hockey Championship.
And at the time, I was saying, yeah, great. Mark Messier will be great dealing with players and scouting players, but they did horribly.
I don't really think Messier's cut out to be a manager. You know, Drew, that you make one point in terms of notice there. Maybe if he hadn't been a GM before, maybe to get the experience to kind of run the team. But he's run the Canucks for years.
How about the fact that Bob Murray is his assistant? Anaheim conceivably could be playing in April.
Yeah, that's just weird.
I read that. I'm like, what? Is there a different Bob Murray? It's not. It's the Ducks general manager. I thought the whole thing was a little bizarre.
Well, I guess, Richie, that would be him helping out with the picking of players. But, yeah, that is odd because he's got other fish to fry. So.
There's
got
to be other players not directly involved in the running of two NHL teams, especially one that has certain legitimate playoff aspirations that could be in charge of this team.
We can ask Dan Wynn about it.
We will ask Dan.
Put it on the board.
Put it on the board. Let's go to break. When we come back, Anthony Sanfilippo of the Delaware County Daily Times. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Top of the hour, 1 hour down, 2 hours to go. It's time to go to the Illegal Curve Hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
pleased to be joined on the line by a good friend of this program from the Delaware County Daily Times, Anthony Sanfilippo. Welcome back to the program.
Hey, guys.
How you doing, Anthony?
No talk.
Yeah, it's been a while.
We're looking back. It's like normally we get you on at least, you know, it's like been quiet in Philadelphia this year. There's been no fights in the dressing room. Nothing's going on. It must be boring for you.
It has been until like the last couple of weeks. It's been real boring. They were winning games.
Mm-hmm.
There was no conflict. Now all of a sudden they can't beat anybody. And everybody in town's questioning whether or not this team can compete for a Stanley Cup now. So it's starting to get juicy.
Well, there you go. That's why we figured it's time to get you back on, so you can give us the lowdown of what's going on in Philly. Let's start with the straw that stirs the drink in Philly, and that's Chris Pronger.
Sure.
You know, reports have him out as 3 to 4 weeks. Is the team certain that he's going to be back for the playoffs?
Yeah, it's not really that bad of an injury, guys. They're calling it a microfracture in his hand. It was from blocking a shot. Actually happened against the Islanders in late February. Came back and actually played a few games afterwards, but still couldn't grip his stick really well. So they put like a tiny screw in. He's going to start. He's getting the cast off today or tomorrow. I'm sorry, then he's going to start skating this week. He's still got to do some rehab, obviously, to get grip strength back again. But once he gets his grip strength back, then he'll be ready to go. The optimistic belief is that he could be back for the last week of the regular season, maybe get a few games in before the playoffs start, but they're pretty confident that even if he doesn't get that last week in, that he will be back come the first playoff game, which likely will be like around the 14th of April. So that'll keep him out, that would keep him out about a month total, which is what they expected. And for a small fracture, that's about right. It's not anything muscular or a ligament or anything along those lines, which tend to linger a little bit longer. Bones tend to heal quicker. So they're pretty confident he will be back.
Anthony, when you're a team like Philly and you have the luxury of a lot of depth, last year some of that depth was called into question in terms of their fifth and sixth defensemen. And this year they went out and they added, in the summer they added Andre Mezeros from Tampa, and they added Sean O'Donnell as a free agent. Do you see that, this defensive depth overall, 1 through 6, being a big help to this team in the playoffs?
Yeah, I really do. And the one thing that's kind of interesting is, first of all, Mezeros has been huge for them.
Mm-hmm.
He's really been, if you can make an argument with Pronger having been hurt all year, that he has been their best defenseman. I mean, he was among the top plus minus guys, still is among top plus minus guys in the league. He's starting to provide a little bit of offense. They've been using him more lately on the power play and in place of Pronger and in some more offensive situations. So he's really been a huge addition, and Laviolette has gone to playing the last couple of games playing his top four defensemen more minutes, so he's giving them like 20 to 25, mm-hmm. not 25 minutes a game, and Mezeros fits right in there, and that's without Pronger on the team. So you know that they have at least five guys who they can rely on to go 25 minutes. And O'Donnell has slowed down a little bit. Started off the season really well. Hurt his knee in a game in New York about a month and a half ago. It really hasn't. He's kind of struggled a little bit since then. It's still bothering him. He's still getting ice put on it after games and getting treatment after games. So they're going to limit his minutes a little bit here down the stretch, and they may even limit his minutes come playoff time. But nevertheless, when you have a guy with a Stanley Cup on his resume, who's been in the league for 17 years, who knows how to play his position, is a really solid stay-at-home guy as your sixth defenseman,
mm-hmm.
and you only have to worry about playing him maybe 12 to 15 minutes a night, I think that it's really, really shows how deep you are on defense, and that's the way that the Flyers plan on trying to win the Stanley Cup from the defense out.
You know, Anthony, Brian Boucher's got his fair share of starts lately, but it appears that, Peter Laviolette's confident in Sergei Bobrovsky, and he's the number one goalie going into the playoffs. How short of a leash do you think he'll be on in the playoffs, or, are we already, expecting him to have a couple of, hiccups along the way?
It's a good question, and I'm not even convinced yet that Bobrovsky is definitely the guy. And, I got to tell you, I had lunch with Laviolette down in Atlanta on the off day a couple days ago. And we were just sitting around talking about a lot of things involving the team. And he was pretty open about a lot of stuff. But the one thing he really didn't, the one direction he wouldn't go in the conversation was goaltending. He still wouldn't commit one way or the other. I think that they're going to continue to give Bobrovsky chances here in the last dozen games and see if maybe he can pick up where he was at the very beginning of the season. But I'll be honest with you guys, since November, Bobrovsky has not really been a real confident goalie. He's struggled with certain things. He doesn't play the puck well. He has a hard time communicating because he hasn't really picked up the English language well. Is there talent there? Yes. Is it a long-term talent? Yes, but it still needs to develop. And if they want to try and win this year, he may have to go with Boucher. And I think, like I said, I think they're going to give Bobrovsky the chances coming up here in the next few games. But if he doesn't turn it around here before April 1st, I think that the decision will be Brian Boucher as your starting goaltender in the playoffs.
You guys were able to have lunch in Atlanta without getting swarmed by legions of Thrashers fans?
Well, you know, the funny thing was, I got to give the Atlanta fans credit. I was ripping them at the beginning of the game because there was maybe 5,000 people in that building at the start of that game on Thursday night. And I'd say at least 2,000 of them were Flyer fans.
Yeah, exactly.
But it was a late arriving crowd. And they actually ended up with their fourth largest crowd of the year for that game. So the people got in there. It took them a while. But they got in. And, you know, hey, that Thrashers team is not as bad as, you know, you would think. Mm-hmm. They got off to a great start. They struggled mightily for a long period of time.
Yeah.
But now they're kind of clawing their way back, and they're kind of hanging in there. And if they can win a couple games here down the stretch, they'll make it interesting for that eighth playoff spot.
We're joined on the line by Anthony Sanfilippo of the Delaware County Daily Times. Now, Anthony, the trade deadline is, of course, about a month ago or maybe three weeks ago at this point, and the big acquisition that the Flyers made was Christopher Stieg, getting him from the Maple Leafs. Rate his play as a member of the Philadelphia Flyers.
Who is that? Who did they get?
Some guy named Chris.
You know, Versteeg, actually, when he first got there, actually was a little bit of, you know, made some impression, good impressions right off the bat. He obviously showed his skill that he has, and he could score some goals, and he's a little bit of a pest in the offensive zone. But I'll tell you, he's maybe the worst player on the team in his own end with the puck.
Oh, yeah.
He turns the puck over more than anybody I think I've ever seen. It's unbelievable.
That turnover that he had against the Rangers in the slot.
Oh,
that was like the worst. That was the worst defensive zone turnover by a forward I've seen in years.
Oh, it's horrible, and that's not the only one. I mean, it happens a lot. You don't get to see them all on the highlights, or unless you're really watching the game, because they don't always go in and turn the goals. But he turns the puck over a ton. He's been taken off of Mike Richards' line. He's been demoted down to the third line, where he's been playing center the last few games with James Van Riemsdyk and Dan Carcillo. So it goes to show you where he kind of fits in the pecking order right now. Flyers did give up a lot for him in a first-round pick and a third-round pick. So you say maybe that was a little too much for a guy who doesn't really have the smarts to play in the defensive end of the game. But you hope that he's only 24, he's a restricted free agent, you have him under contract for another year, that you can kind of turn him into the kind of player you want, but may not have been the right move if you're looking for him being the final piece for a Stanley Cup puzzle this season.
Yeah, that's interesting points you make about, especially about his defensive play. You know, look at the forward group as a whole, Anthony. This is a very, very deep group. I mean, I don't know if anybody. I think maybe every team in the league might trade, you know, their forward group for the Philly forward group. And within that forward group, in the playoffs, is there one guy that you think is the key to the Flyers' success?
Well, it depends on how you're looking at things. I mean, think about last year, the success that they had. I mean, Danny Briere, in my mind, was the best player. Could have won the Conn Smythe Trophy anyway. If it would have gone to a seventh game, he might have won. He led the entire league in scoring in the playoffs. And I think as he goes, so the offense goes. But I still say, no matter what, Mike Richards is the most important forward on the team because he does everything. He plays power play. He plays penalty kill. He plays a ton of 5-on-5. He should get 23, 24 minutes a game. And he is the on-ice leader of the team as the captain. I mean, he's not a big vocal captain. He's more like an Yzerman type was. He's not going to go in the room and be, you know, fire and brimstone. That's Chris Pronger's deal. But if on the ice, he's going to be trying to lead with his emotion and lead with his play and his style. And I still think ultimately he's the guy that makes the difference for the Flyers one way or the other.
Anthony, quick question here. I know last year they had a little bit of a prickly relationship, but it seemed to get better as the season went on. Are Pronger and Richards on good terms?
I wouldn't call them like best buddies by any stretch of the imagination, but they definitely, you know, have a good working relationship now. They kind of understand each other, mm-hmm. and Richards is okay with that. Richards, I think, last year kind of felt a little affronted when Pryor was so involved in the leadership of the team, because he was a new guy coming in and just kind of taking over the room. And I think that they've kind of grown to the situation, you know, to a situation where Pronger is the loud voice in the room, and Richards leads on the ice, and it's a good cop bad cop kind of scenario that they've kind of created, where Richards is the good cop and Pronger's the bad cop, and it works. And I think that, you know, they may not be guys who are going out to a movie together on the road when they have an off day, but at the same time, I think that they have a decent enough relationship to actually make it work for the team.
Anthony, I've got another question for you about Peter Laviolette. How has he changed or, you know, evolved as a coach, you know, now that he's had a full season with the Flyers?
I don't think he's changed. I think that the team has changed. I think that they've, like we talked about at the very beginning, we were joking about it, but, you know, they've kind of become boring. and I think that's what Laviolette wanted. Mm-hmm. I think he wants a real workmanlike attitude when it comes to the Flyers. He wants this team to just come out there, do their job, not make any waves. They don't take a lot of penalties. You wouldn't say it. The Flyers are not a team who's taking a lot of penalties. They don't get into a lot of fights anymore. They're physical, but they're physical within the framework of the game. They're not overtly physical like they had been in years past. So I think that, you know, everyone thinks Flyers, Broad Street Bullies, big physical goonish type team, mm-hmm. and for years they have been. Under Peter Laviolette, they're nothing close. So I'm not certain Laviolette has changed as a coach, but I think that he has, in a lot of ways, in his 18 months here, changed the culture of an organization. And it's part of the reason why they're really successful. The Flyers were stuck in that mentality for so long, and Laviolette single-handedly has brought them out of it, and now all of a sudden you're talking about them having a real shot winning a Stanley Cup again. So maybe that's what this organization needed, and I give the coach a ton of credit.
Anthony Sanfilippo of the Delaware County Daily Times, thanks very much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Anytime, guys.
Thanks, Anthony.
Always a pleasure.
I'm sure we'll be hearing from you come playoff time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Sounds great.
Take care, Anthony.
Right,
thanks a lot.
Care.
I mean, Anthony knows what's going on in the Flyers organization better than anybody
else.
Telling
you, two more times, that's 10.
Your counting
skills. Eighth appearance.
Wow, this Ezzy's a mathematician in his spare time. Before we go to break, let's remind our listeners that tomorrow here on Sports Radio 1290, as well as on Fab 94.3 and Bob 99.9 FM, is the IMS 1001 Donations Radio-a-thon in support of the Winnipeg Humane Society. Donations will be accepted at Polo Park, St. Vitale Center, and Kildonan Place from noon until 6 p.m. You can also call 927-1001, toll-free 1-866-436-1001, or online at winnipeghumanesociety.ca. Also, you can stop by the Winnipeg Humane Society from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. That's at 45 Hearst Way. All proceeds go directly to the care of animals at the Winnipeg Humane Society. And as someone who adopted a dog from the Humane Society, I can assure you this is a fantastic cause if you wanted to spend some of your hard-earned money giving it to a fantastic charity. The Winnipeg Humane Society is certainly deserving of your money. And let's go to break. When we come back, six things we learned this week. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show for this Saturday morning. We just heard from Anthony Sanfilippo of the Delaware County Daily Times. Still to come on the program, Tim Campbell of the Winnipeg Free Press, Dan Wood of the Anaheim Ducks Radio Network, and Mike Harrington of the Buffalo News. It's time now for six things we learned this week.
Six things we learned this week.
Commence countdown. Six.
We'll start with you, Ezzy.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
That's cool, no big deal.
That's okay, Richie. I thought we already told you. You're being usurped, and we're cutting you out of the show slowly but surely.
Hurt.
I know. Well, I'm starting with Ezzy because he started with the Philadelphia Flyers, so I thought it'd be quite apropos, just, you know, a natural lead-in. Anyways, Ezzy, Philadelphia Flyers forward Jeff Carter should be given more media attention for being one of the best pure forwards in the league.
I'm going to preface this by saying Richie's also a big Jeff Carter fan, but I'm
for Richards, but I like Carter.
both of those guys. I remember I've been following a lot of the 03 draft, you know, throughout my hockey watching and, you know, I guess broadcasting career now. That 05 team was considered, you know, the World Junior team is the team I'm talking about, was considered the best team. And Jeff Carter has been one of those guys that has kind of got less attention than some of those other guys like Ryan Getzlaff, Sidney Crosby, Dion Phaneuf, the list goes on, Carey Price, and for a lot of reason. I mean, you could argue all those players are better than Jeff Carter, but Jeff Carter has quietly been getting the job done for Philadelphia all year. I think he's at 32 goals now, and I think he should be given a little bit more credit. I mean, we were just talking to Anthony Sanfilippo. Not just credit, but I think attention for what he does. Jeff Carter is a big guy, Rich. He's 6'3", 6'3 and a half. You know, he's got a wrist shot, but he's a pure goal scorer. He's not a deker. He's a shooter. And, you know, he's maybe not the loudest guy on the ice, but he's a talented guy, and I would go as far as to say he's a top five goal scorer in the NHL. I think he might be top five now. You know, but this guy's got a lot of skill, and I think this guy's going to put up big time numbers in the playoffs. He's going to be one of those guys that gets a lot of game winners for them.
It's a good prediction. It's a good prediction.
He's a sniper. Pure sniper.
Carter. He's a goal scorer.
Five.
Richie, you've always been a fan of Jamie Benn's skill level, and you feel that his development was one of the main reasons the Stars traded James Neal to Pittsburgh for Alex Goligoski.
Well, that's exactly right, Drew. I mean, he's got hands. He's a handsy player. He's a toolsy player. He's got, he's as confident with the puck as you're going to see a young player be. And I think one of the reasons why James Neal was dealt is because they feel confident in Jamie Benn's skill level. Now, I know Benn can play wing and center. They probably may want him as a center, especially if they can get rid of Ribeiro. But filling a top six role, he can fill that skill void. I think he's more skilled than James Neal. He's 6'2", over 200 pounds, so he's bigger than people think. His last five games, the guy's been putting up. I mean, he just keeps getting points. And the biggest thing is you see a spike in his ice time since Neal went up to about, you know, the past few games he had some time under 20, but generally since James Neal was traded, Ben's been playing over 20 minutes a game. They've increased his responsibility, and you have to factor that into the consideration. They needed help on defense. They have talent. They have young talent, and Jamie Benn is one of the up-and-coming young talented players in the National Hockey League.
Four.
From Victoria, BC, too.
Ezzy, the National Hockey League needs to ban hits to the head immediately and stop avoiding the serious changes that need to be made in order to make the game safer.
Guys, we talked about
this. Really
desperate. This is really profound.
You really couldn't find anything else?
Let this be a lesson in why you don't do six things in the at 6:30 in the morning.
No, but you know what? The GMs, we're going to talk to Tim Campbell about this in about, you know, just over 20 minutes, but most GMs don't want that. So, and, you know, most fans now are starting to, you know, come to the other side, if you will. But I think it's time to get real. Or you know, we're going to have these injuries and we're going to be talking about it for forever, really. They have to ban checks to the head. And I wasn't so big. You know, we've talked about this a lot in the two-plus years we've been doing the show about equipment. To me, equipment, now I'm on page with that. There has to be drastic changes to the equipment starting next year, and I mean
start tomorrow.
And you know, you're right, Drew. And ban checks to the head, and we'll get rid of some of these cheap shots.
Three.
Richie, the New York Rangers forecheck is extremely difficult for opponents to handle. If the Rangers make the playoffs and face a team that doesn't have the best puck-moving defensemen, they could upset a top squad.
They could. They're relentless on the forecheck. That starts with everybody on that team. That's not just Ryan Callahan and Brandon Dubinsky, two of the hardest-working players in the National Hockey. That's what Artem Anisimov. That's what Sean Avery, when he's going, it's a lot of the guys. It's not only speed, Drew. It's a willingness to compete. It's a willingness to engage below the goal lines, along the boards. They dominate you with work ethic. They dominate you with their 2-1-2 forecheck. They're really, really, really aggressive, hyper-aggressive forecheck under John Tortorella. They face a team, for example, like Montreal yesterday.
Yeah. They just couldn't handle them.
Puck-moving defensemen?
Yeah.
There are too many injuries right now?
Well,
couldn't handle it. You look at other teams, Drew. I mean, Philly, a team like Philly could handle it.
I'm just saying, right now they're matching up with Washington, and no one's ever said that Washington's defense...
But Washington's defense maybe lacks in defensive ability.
But they can move the puck a little bit.
They can move the puck really well. You know, Carlson can move the puck. Mike Green can certainly move the puck. He gets back. You know, I mean, Hannon's not great, but Wyman can move the puck. That's not a great matchup for New York.
Well, look at the
Boston's top. A better matchup for
you
them.
You think Boston's a better matchup?
I do.
Okay. That's what I was going to say. I mean, pick their best matchup.
But that forecheck's right going to be trouble. You watch the way they work and the way they beat teams down below. And I actually had written this before yesterday's game, but if people saw that on national TV, realizing how good the Rangers are in the forecheck.
Richie, you were on national TV?
No, the Rangers were.
Oh. Two. Richie should be on national TV.
Really?
That's what I wrote that on Facebook. I'm like, TSN should have Richie on right now. They had so many guys on that. TSN had so many guys in studio for trade deadline day. I was like, Richie should be there. Why not?
There are more guys than trades.
That's true. Ezzy, the National Hockey League players and coaches should be open and honest with the media, but some are showing a complete lack of respect and discretion by publicly commenting on calls involving their players or teammates.
Last week I was upset.
Not sure what that means.
Neither do I. Let me try to figure this out.
Thanks.
Last week I was a little bit upset that some of the Phoenix Coyotes players were being quoted in the media for, you know, talking about Winnipeg because, you know, it was showing that there was a little bit lack of foresight into what they were saying. But I realize that the media now is 24/7, especially with social media and all that. Sorry, I was thinking about the social network.
The movie,
but your life.
As far as you know, the Danny Heatley incident, they were quoting players, you know, directly after the game, and they were saying, you know, that was obviously a cheap shot. You know, keep it to yourself. I'm all for, you know, players saying something, because a lot of the time their answers are scripted, but I think that it's, you know, in the come playoffs, some of the stuff is going to be used as bulletin board material, and I think it's not just a lack of respect for other players, it's lack of respect for your teammates who are going to have to deal with some of the comments you're making. So I think it's gotten a little out of hand. Every single night now, it seems like a player is, you know, making a comment that they're probably going to regret in the next day.
Okay.
I like it.
Because the Minnesota Wild do not get that much news coverage, people are not giving Mikko Koivu's absence enough attention.
Well, I mean, Drew, the reason that the Wild fell out of the race is really simply Mikko Koivu.
His absence.
Yep. I mean, this is a guy who plays tough minutes. He is a similar player to Jonathan Taves, not as maybe as good of a shot and maybe scoring skills, but basically as Jonathan Taves light, but without the media attention, and his loss, especially on a team that's not deep in terms of offensive talent, was significant in terms of the fall off of the Minnesota Wild. And it's unfortunate. I mean, Todd Richards did a pretty good job there with a team that I didn't think was anywhere close to the playoffs, although everybody's in the playoffs these days. But Koivu's all-around ability, power play, penalty kill, you know, he makes his teammates better. And, you know, when he plays 60 games and not 80, or 65 or 70 and not 80, that's a problem, right, guys? I mean, he came back March 14th.
Yeah.
He's playing 20 minutes a game basically since then. He's had 2 points in two games, two against Vancouver. But the month of absence from February, middle of February to middle of March, is when, you know,
Minnesota slid out of the playoff contention.
And why else?
Yeah. I mean, you could say they're on the fringes, but they're really not. I mean,
why else? That's it. That's it.
Michael.
And he's one of the most underrated players in the National Hockey League. And the Wild pay him well,
yes,
but he deserves it.
There you go. Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to do Statistically Speaking. Still to come, Tim Campbell of the Winnipeg Free Press. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290.